Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined as always by my co-host Paul Shields. And Paul, it is Monday, October 23rd, 2023, and let's jump right into the world of sports and start today's program as we always do on a Monday with some news and notes from around the sporting world. First and foremost, I want to get your thoughts quickly on tonight's action in both the NLCS and ALCS, respectively. I know we've been talking about this playoffs for baseball a lot over the last few episodes, even though you don't like talking about either of the Texas teams. But the fact of the matter is, we are on the precipice now of the World Series. It starts on Friday the 27th, if I am not mistaken, if not Saturday the 28th. And last night, the Texas Rangers routed the Astros after the Astros had picked themselves up off the mat, seemingly, and won three straight to take a 3-2 lead. The Rangers came back and had a decisive Game 6 victory to force a Game 7 in the ALCS that takes place tonight. Conversely, the Philadelphia Phillies in the National League were able to get themselves back on track after two really shaky games themselves and take a 3-2 win back to Philadelphia for tonight's game against the Diamondbacks. So do you believe that the Phillies close it out at home tonight in Game 6, or are we looking at a Game 7 in that series tomorrow? And because it is Game 7 between the two teams that you hate on the American League side tonight, if you had to pick a winner coming out of Game 7 of the American League side, which team would it be?
Well, as far as the National League series goes, I do think the Phillies will wrap it up. I think when we talked about this series originally, I said it would be Phillies in 5 or 6, so I'm going to stick with that. I like a lot of what Arizona's done. They've really stuck around in this series and played maybe better than expected, which is, I mean, they're in the championship series, so it feels weird saying that, but I think you understand my sentiment. But yeah, I think Phillies is a better team and will win tonight or this afternoon. Again, as far as the Texas series goes, I don't care. I haven't watched a single minute of it live. I've only caught the highlights because, again, I don't care. I'll be cheering against whatever team wins. If you're going to force me to pick a team, I guess I'll pick the Astros because I think they're the better team. But again, couldn't care less. If neither of these teams showed up to the World Series and they handed the trophy to the winner of the National League Series, I would be perfectly happy with that.
Once again, I will use a statement that I've used a lot here on the program lately. Tell me how you really feel, Paul. Moving on from that, I want to get your thoughts. Over the weekend on Saturday night, we saw the second game of a season-long 5-game road trip for the Toronto Maple Leafs take place against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they were coming off of an interesting game back in Florida since Florida ousted them in the playoffs last year. So to bounce back the way that they did, it was not a clean game to start by any stretch of the imagination. Ilya Samsonov ended up getting benched after, I believe, letting in 3 goals on four shots. And then Joseph Woll really came in and shut the door for the majority of that game to allow the Maple Leafs to get back into the contest and eventually win the game 4-3. Did you have any takeaways from that game on Saturday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the Leafs start the season with two wins where they, I think, didn't play their best hockey. And then a tough game against Chicago where they didn't play very well. But I thought the game against Florida was maybe the best game they played all year. And it was, unfortunately, a little bit of a replay of last year's playoff series with Bobrovsky standing tall and the Leafs not able to solve him for more than one. And then Tampa felt like it might be the same thing. I felt for Samsonov because I would say that of the three goals he let in, there's not a single one there that I would quote unquote blame the goalie for, but you got to make a save, right? The goalie is part of the team. He's the last line of defense, as is famously said in the NHL often. And when Joseph Woll came in, he made a couple of saves early that were nice saves, were really calming for the team. And I thought the team started to play significantly better. I didn't think they even played that bad in the first period. They had, you know, a lost faceoff, two lost faceoffs that hurt them in one mistake, which, like, that's hockey, right? It's a game of mistakes. So I wasn't even that unhappy with the way they played in the first. You got to get a save. Luckily for the team, Woll goes in and plays really well. He's very steady, and they find a way to win another overtime game in Tampa. So I think that's the last three in a row they've played there. They've won in overtimes. That's like dating back to last year's first round playoffs. You got to feel pretty good about that if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think that, you know, we're going to see a legitimate battle for the best goalie on this team. And I think that, you know, Joe Woll has a lot of opportunity. If he plays well enough, I think he's going to get the net. And Samsonov has to bounce back, right? He has to prove that he is the goalie that he showed last year, where he played exceptionally well for the Maple Leafs when he was healthy. So yeah, I think the Leafs, as are many teams in the league, are getting better as, you know, the systems start to make sense and line combinations start to solidify and defensive systems start to get played better. That's just a function of the first week of hockey in every season, and every team is going through that. But yeah, I mean, I'd certainly rather be 3-2 than 2-3. And the Leafs managed to find a way to do that on Saturday night.
Two questions. Do you believe that Joseph Woll will get the start tomorrow in Washington now? I know.
So he was getting the start before you get to your next. Sorry, Spence, don't walk you over. They asked that question immediately following the game on Saturday, and Sheldon Keefe had said that Woll was already scheduled to play Wednesday, so they weren't going to change the schedule. He is playing tomorrow night. That's already been announced, or a couple nights from now. That's already been announced. So Woll will be back in there, and I would just expect that we'll see Samsonov back in the net after that.
Okay. But yes, Joseph Woll has looked very, very comfortable early on in the season, and it'll be interesting to see who does grab the net, because early on, it seems like Joseph Woll wants it a little bit more than Samsonov.
I don't think it has anything to do with want. I think Samsonov, they're two entirely different goalies. Samsonov plays with a little bit more frenetic energy. He's a little bit, he relies on his athleticism a little more than a goalie like Joseph Woll, who is very technically sound and very calm in the net. It's at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Stop the puck. And however you do that is going to, like, the person that's able to do that most consistently is going to get the net. We know that goaltending is a little like magic. You know, we have an idea of how it works, but at the end of the day, goalies get hot for one reason or another, and goalies fall off for one reason or another. Look at a goalie like Jacob Markstrom last year. Vezina candidate 2 years ago, absolute tire fire last year for no good reason. So I would say that, you know, if Joe Woll continues to play the way he's played and continues to be as calm and even keeled as he is while stopping, you know, 9 out of 10 shots, or over 9 out of 10, I think he's got a 928 save percentage right now, then he's going to get a lot of chance to have the net.
Right. Who did you say was an absolute tire fire last year?
Jacob Markstrom in Calgary.
Yes, he absolutely was. You are correct. Sorry, it cut out when you said that.
Oh, that's okay.
I also want to get your thoughts just briefly, if I can, on the start of the season for Alexander Ovechkin, because it is very early on in the season. We've talked about that. But there's been a lot of pundits talking about Alexander Ovechkin looking different this year. And he is 38 years old. And we all know that, you know, Father Time is undefeated in every sport. And I'm not saying that that's the case here necessarily with Alexander Ovechkin, because it is very early, like we said, and I think he will be fine at the end of the day. But have you seen anything early this season so far from the Alex Ovechkin side of things that may be a little concerning to you?
No, I think we're seeing what we would, like, it's a rough start. I get it. But again, we're talking about 4 or 5 games max. He's the best goal scorer of all time. He's going to score goals. If you're expecting anything else out of Alexander Ovechkin at this point in his career, I think you're expecting too much, right? He's never been a defensive stalwart. He's, you know, his forechecking ability, which was kind of almost surprising in his prime, just how heavy a player he was and how he could get on a forecheck and win a puck back and then have the ability to score the way that he does, was, you know, pretty impressive. Now, I just don't think it's, I think it's a lot to ask out of a player who is, you know, in his late 30s, chasing records on a team that's not very good. Like Washington is in a similar situation that Pittsburgh is in the sense that they have aging stars in Ovechkin and Backstrom, who they are going to continue to push to make playoff runs and to make Stanley Cup runs. But the reality is that they're just not the team that they once were. And while Pittsburgh has doubled down on that in signing Carlson and really trying to get, you know, Letang, Crosby, Malkin back into the playoffs and back after it, Washington simply hasn't added that level of talent to the team this year. So I think you're expecting a lot out of Washington and a lot out of Ovechkin for him to be much more than he is. He's going to score 30-plus goals. He might even creep up over 40. Again, best goal scorer of all time. He's going to eventually score goals. But like you said, the league is going to catch up with you. Time is going to catch up with you eventually. This is what happens. So, I don't know. Am I worried about it? No, because my expectations for the Capitals are pretty low this year.
Do you believe that regardless of a slow start, that we will still be talking at the latter part of the season about the pursuit of Wayne Gretzky's goal scoring record?
I think he's going to get the record. I actually have no doubt of that. I think he'll hang on as long as it takes, because he's still going to score goals. You know, like, that's the thing. He has never, ever lost the ability to find the back of the net. I think his career low for goals is something like 31. So his worst season is still a season that guys would dream of having as a goal scorer in the NHL. So I have no doubt. And to be clear, whether he catches it or not, this is the best goal scorer that we have ever seen. And Wayne Gretzky is the greatest player of all time. There is literally no doubt. Just look at the records. Look at what he did when no one else was doing it. There's no argument there. But when we're talking about strictly the skill of scoring goals, Ovechkin was scoring 40 and 50 goals when nobody else in the league was. So he is... he's incredible when it comes to scoring goals. So I think he's going to catch it. I don't think we should all be all that surprised when he does. It's just, he might, you know, it might go into the twilight years of his career where he's having to finish it off, you know, when maybe he should have retired.
Like a Jaromir Jagr almost, which, by the way, shout out to Jaromir Jagr, because he's still playing in the Czech Professional Hockey League at the age of 52. And they showed him on SportsCenter the other day. He's still in really unbelievable shape, looking like Wolverine, as he always does. And he has something like 23 goals in that league at the age of 52. Now, I understand it's not the NHL, but it's still pretty high-level hockey for playing at the age of 52. So shout-out to Jaromír Jágr.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. He just keeps plugging along, doing what he likes to do. So hard to be too mad at that.
Right. Moving to our Week 7 NFL wrap-up, I want to get your thoughts on some key games. First, starting with the Cleveland Browns and the Indianapolis Colts. This ended up being one of the most entertaining games of the week. It was a big game for both teams at this juncture in time. And the Browns ended up getting a very late touchdown by Kareem Hunt that was just squeaked in over the goal line with seconds left on the clock for the 39-38 victory. Did you see any highlights of this game, and do you have any thoughts particularly about the fact that this ended up being a very entertaining game from both teams?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the highlights. It's not a game that was on my radar, but obviously important game. Important game for both teams. It keeps Cleveland in the conversation in that AFC North, keeps them in the conversation when it comes to what the playoff picture might look like as we start to get to, you know, week 8 and week 9. You can start to see how the playoff picture is going to shape up. So, good win for them. I mean, as far as the Colts go, it's not like they've put themselves in a tremendous hole, right? They're sort of hanging on. And I think if we were looking at this team at the beginning of the year, anyone would have said a 500 finish, like, or an even finish for this Colts team would be pretty darn good or close to, you know, cause they're a young squad. This is definitely a team in transition. With where Cleveland, I think, expects them to be and all that money they paid Watson, I would be a little concerned that they had to squeak it out by one point after a mistake by the Colts really handed them back the game when it looked like it was going to be over. But you know, you win the games you win, and they're not allowed to take them away from you. Right. So, good on the Browns for getting the win. But the Colts, I did not expect them to look the way that they have looked. They look like a team that is building something that might be able to grow and get better as the years go on, as they are very young. So, yeah, entertaining game. I'm a little sad I didn't get to see more of it in real time because, yeah, like I said, it wasn't even on my radar until I saw the final score.
Right. And one of the most surprising games in the early window pitted the Buffalo Bills going into New England and Foxborough to take on Bill Belichick and the Patriots. In the end, the Patriots ended up holding out a 4-point victory, 29-25, with a very late touchdown themselves. And once again, we continue with the narrative of a very up-and-down first half of the season for the Buffalo Bills, where it's a very Jekyll and Hyde team this year. One week they look like world beaters, the next week they lose to the New England Patriots, and they have won, or had won, 6 out of the last 7 contests in Foxborough. And with this win by the Patriots yesterday, not only is it a morale booster, I think, for this team that's really been struggling the majority of the year, we've made no bones about that, but Bill Belichick becomes only the third coach in NFL history behind George Halas and Don Shula with 300 victories.
Yeah, I mean, well, Belichick's going to go down as one of the greatest of all time, regardless, right? Like, that was going to happen regardless of what happened this season anyway, or I mean, he'd have to do a lot to damage the reputation he's built. And look, full credit to the Patriots for getting the win, but if I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, I would not be happy today. The Bills looked so sloppy. The details of the game just look like they were completely ignored. And then you're forcing Josh Allen to play hero quarterback on way too many plays right now. This, we have to start asking the question, is if this team is really ever going to get it done. Like, they look more like pretenders over the last handful of weeks than they do contenders. And when we talked about them last week, they managed to, you know, battle out a win that they probably didn't deserve, right, against the Giants. And they had a chance this week to come out and go, hey, look, we didn't have our best last week, but we can win when we don't have our best. And now we're going to show you what our best look like. Even though the Patriots are not the juggernaut that they once were, this is a divisional game. This is a team that historically has kind of mopped the floor with Buffalo, except with recent years, obviously excluded. So this is a real chance for the Bills to go in and just put a beating on a team that's simply not very good in their division. Instead, in my opinion, they get embarrassed. And I just think if you have true Super Bowl aspirations, these are not games that you can lose at this point in the season. So if I'm a Bills fan, I am not happy today.
Yeah, I agree completely with that statement. Speaking of statements, the Baltimore Ravens were at home against the Detroit Lions, and man, did they have a statement game themselves, and arguably Lamar Jackson had one of his best games of his entire career yesterday to the tune of 38-6. Now, I do believe that this is only a blip in the radar for the Detroit Lions. You cannot go through an NFL season and continue to do unbelievable things like they have done over the first 6 weeks. It just very rarely happens where a team only loses one game or two games and whatever the case may be. However, having said that, I did not think that they would lose to the tune of 38-6. I thought it would be like something like 24-17 or whatever the case may be there. I was completely wrong in that aspect. Surprise, surprise, I'm always wrong, it seems. What did you make of this score, this game, and the fact that Lamar Jackson, like I said, possibly had one of his best games of his entire career to date?
Yeah, well, I thought Lamar sort of reminded everybody just how talented he is, just how good he is. From a Lions standpoint, I tend to agree with you. What they've shown us this season is that they are a pretty darn good football team. And this is more of an outlier than I think, the sign of things to come. I think part of it is a learning curve, right? There's a lot of guys in that locker room who have lost for a long time. And nobody likes to lose. No professional athlete wants to lose a game ever. But it can be real hard to learn how to win consistently. And we see that with teams that are starting to find a way to be very good teams. There's always that bump in the road that, you know, looks a little bit like some of the old habits might creep in, or some of that newly found winning confidence sort of gets, you know, takes you out of the things that you did to get there. I think we see that in every young team or team that is developing and getting good. We see them stumble, right? We see speed bumps. And I think that this is a speed bump that we'll see, that we saw with the Lions yesterday. I would expect they will continue to play very well, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another game like this along the way where they sort of get a little bit of a smack in the head from a team that's still real good, right? And the Ravens are still a really good team with a very explosive quarterback. And you know, for this week, the Lions got exposed. But like I said, I think that's more of a speed bump than it is the road that they're on now.
The Kansas City Chiefs were at home against the LA Chargers. And I just want to get your thoughts on the fact that on National Tight Ends Day, which is an actual holiday that took place yesterday, Travis Kelce, had possibly one of his best games of his entire career. He ended up going for, 12 catches for 179 yards and a touchdown. And obviously, Taylor Swift was there once again. She was going nuts and things like that. But also Patrick Mahomes things by going 32 of 42 with 425 passing yards, 4 passing touchdowns, 1 interception, and 1 sack.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas City still doing their thing, right? Like, they just continue to roll. This squad is just built to win. I don't know what else there is to say. The Chargers are not a bad football team. Like, we, you know, I think we're all waiting for them to sort of get over the hump and really start to show some of the promise that we've seen over the last couple seasons, and they're really struggling to make that next step into the elite level of teams. And Kansas City just shows you why they are so good and what they are so good at, and that is just controlling a game. And, you know, the chemistry between Kelce and Mahomes is off the charts. And this is just an unbelievable football team that continues to be the class of the NFL.
Right. And another game that intrigued me was the Pittsburgh Steelers went into SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles and squeaked out a very late 24-17 win against the Rams. The Rams look like they were dominating the Steelers the majority of the game in every aspect, which they were, including rookie wide receiver Puka Nacua going absolutely off yet again yesterday for 154 total receiving yards, which was crazy, and it helped me out a lot because I had him in my fantasy yesterday as well, so it got me a lot of points. But here we are. These teams are now 3-4 in the case of the Rams and 4-2 in the case of the now seemingly surprising Steelers, because 4-2 through 6 weeks of an NFL season is nothing to sneeze at. Now, obviously, with the Pittsburgh Steelers getting outplayed virtually every week and becoming the heart attack team of the league this year so far, it cannot sustain itself where you would think that it would not be able to sustain itself. But are you surprised that Mike Tomlin has Kenny Pickett and George Pickens and Devontae Johnson playing at this level to the tune of 4-2 now with T.J. Watt doing T.J. Watt things week in and week out, whether it be sacks or an interception for a touchdown yesterday as well, whatever the case may be?
No, I'm not surprised at all. Mike Tomlin might be my favorite coach in the NFL. That guy just finds ways to bring the best out of some pretty poor Steeler teams. Like, you think about even last year and parts of the year before when they just weren't very good, they're still not an easy team to play against. And it feels like every Steelers team across certainly my lifetime has this sort of bend don't break mentality of like, get your yards, get your fantasy stats, but when it comes to getting points in the red zone, we're going to make it really hard on you, and we are going to grind you into dust if we can. They're not like, he is not a coach that is overly concerned with having a flashy offense. I feel like if he could run every play and get a first down, you know, on average, he would just run the ball until, you know, there was a track on the field, like ground into the field. There's something about his mentality of how he prepares this team year in and year out that I have a lot of respect for. So I'm never surprised when the Steelers manage to find a way to win a weird game where they get seemingly outplayed or seemingly outchanced or whatever it is, they find a way to win in a lot of circumstances. Now, I don't think that's championship winning football. You know what I mean? But it might be playoff football. Like, it might get them to the playoffs if they continue to be this hard to play against and they continue to get wins just by grinding teams out. So, you know, I have lots of friends in the Pittsburgh area. So the Steelers are a team that I probably watch a little closer than others, and I'm glad they're doing well.
And let's be serious. There's something in that organization that has really stuck through the test of time, because it's the only organization that I can remember that has had 3 coaches over something like the last 60 years, whether it be Chuck Knoll, the legendary Bill Cowher, and now Mike Tomlin for the last 19 years.
Well, and I think like part of that, you're right, is organizational. For whatever is happening sort of above the field level, right? GMs and above and team presidents and all of that stuff, owners, they obviously believe in consistency, right? They believe in the plan and the process, and they let their football people do the job. And so like, I personally, I think that's the way it should be. I don't get me wrong. I love the Mark Cubans of the world, the Jerry Joneses of the world. They make sports very interesting and fun, but I don't know that would be the greatest environment to work in as a GM or as a coach or anything, because it's really hard to make things happen fast, right? Like oftentimes in organizations, you're moving a cruise ship, not a speedboat. So they don't turn on a dime. You got to work hard to make adjustments and to change course and to do those things. And part of that, in my opinion, takes consistency, which is, again, something I like about the Steelers and something I like about maybe that's why I have so much appreciation for a guy like Mike Tomlin. I've got to watch him be a real good coach for a real long time with the same organization. So you really get to see sort of the patterns and the way that they handle things and all that. So, you know, kudos to them, I think, for showing patience in what is a very impatient world.
Yes, and you talk about not wanting to coach in the hotbed of Dallas or something like that. You know, taking it to baseball for a moment, why don't you talk to the legendary manager, Billy Martin, who got fired and rehired by George Steinbrenner something like 6 times for the Yankees back in the day?
Well, I mean, just ridiculous stories like that. And again, like, baseball is more exciting when you have owners like Steinbrenner who would lose their mind and fire their coach and then rehire him and ask him to wear a mask or whatever, like whatever foolish thing he had him doing. Like, those things are interesting stories. I don't think it makes for sustainable winning sports franchises. And I think that there's an important distinction there.
Okay. And last two things about week 7, I want to get your thoughts on. First and foremost, the marquee matchup of the week was the Sunday nighter that had the Miami Dolphins going to the Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. Everybody was super excited about it. It ended up being the Eagles in their throwback Kelly Green uniforms, Randall Cunningham days, absolutely wonderful uniforms, but that's beside the point, in their Kelly Green uniforms, really taking care of business to the tune of 31-17. And it's been a couple of times now throughout this season where we've seen the Miami Dolphins in big games not show up because the teams have done a really good job of shutting down the way that the Dolphins operate. Because, yes, you can have Tyreek and the wide receivers, Jalen Waddle, and HN when he's healthy and things like that, be a track team in the wide receiver game. But if you shut down the running game of Mostert and some of the other people, which they did last night, it really hampers any team, let alone a Miami Dolphins team that can be very explosive. But if you turn them into a one-dimensional team, it's very hard to win that way in the NFL. And that's twice now in big games this year where they lost 48-20 earlier this season to the Buffalo Bills, and now 31-17 to Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, which, by the way, was the first matchup of their careers between Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, who used to be NCAA championship winning teammates with Alabama in 2018.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little much to say that they didn't show up. This game was very close, right? Like, it was tied in the third quarter, and then Philly ended up, you know, really taking the ball and running with it from there. So what I do think definitely happened, though, was you saw how much that what are they calling it? The greatest show on surf this year. Hilarious name. I love a hilarious name. But you really saw how much trouble, how much they rely on setting up the run game to open up that incredible core of receivers that they have. And when Philadelphia really found a way to not only stop the running game, but how much running back contact did they make in the backfield? Like, how many times were they meeting the Miami running backs in the backfield?
I counted at least 6 or 7 throughout the game.
Yeah, so like it's really hard to get any sort of consistency in your running game when you are being met in the backfield more often than not. So Philly and the Philly defense did a great job of forcing the issue there and really making it hard for them to get any kind of run game solidified. And that basically turns the play action into a non-weapon and forces Tua to be a pocket passer, which we know he's not bad at that, but he's better when he's able to, unleash all the weapons that team has to offer. So I think it's a really good game by the Eagles. Again, the Eagles have put themselves in the conversation with a team like the Chiefs. They look like the class of the, one of maybe 3 or 4 teams that you would say, like, these are the class of the NFL. And Miami Dolphins are striving for that. They're not there yet. And like you said, in some big moments, they've come up real short. So they're going to have to dust themselves off and try again, get back after it. But, you know, with Buffalo falling on their face this week, that division is still Miami's to lose, right? They still control first top spot in that AFC East. So, you know, for a week where they could have put a big statement on a really good team, at least they didn't lose ground in a division that is pretty darn tight.
Week 7 concludes tonight with Monday Night Football and my team, the Niners, going up against the Minnesota Vikings. We know that the Niners have had a lot of injury questions. They had a bye last week, I believe it was. So they're coming off of that. That'll help inevitably. Do you know if there's been an announcement about any of their suspected injured players like Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and their availability going into tonight's matchup?
I have not seen anything currently. I'm just having a quick look here to see looks like McCaffrey is expected to play according to NFL.com. So he is, like, that oblique injury is still listed on the injury report, but he's listed as expected to play.
And same with Deebo Samuel, I think it.
Yeah, looks like same for both. I don't see Deebo. Oh, sorry. MSNBC is reporting that Debo's not going to play, and they have a similar report. This one's a little newer. So yeah, it looks like Deebo, CBS Sports is reporting Deebo out, Christian McCaffrey in. So it looks like Debo's going to miss 2 games as a result of his injury. So, I mean, look, any injury to a star player is tough and it's hard to overcome, but like we're talking about the Vikings. Like I do not think the 49ers should not be losing to the Vikings.
Especially without Justin.
You know, they could probably run the practice squad out there and have a pretty competitive game, in my opinion.
Especially without Justin Jefferson still in the lineup for the Minnesota Vikings, who is their most dynamic player.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, every team goes through injuries. The 49ers are one of those teams that I would put at that elite level. Like, I think they're so good. I think they're so well-balanced. Really fun team to watch, and I just don't think that the Vikings have the weapons to compete. But I mean, of course, there's a reason you play the games, and you know, any given Sunday, as we've heard so many times. So I'm not counting out the Vikings. I just think that, you know, if McCaffrey is ready to go, Debo's a big loss for the 49ers, but I think that's one that they can sustain at least for this week. And then you look ahead to next week, and you're trying to come up with a game plan for a Bengals team that's, I think, more talented than the Vikings. So, yeah, you can't overlook teams. It's the NFL. I know that. But I just don't see. I don't see how the 49ers don't win tonight.
And to end today's show, just a special tip of the cap goes out to Becky Hammond and that Las Vegas Aces team, who became the first WNBA team since 2001 or 2002 to win back-to-back championships. The New York Liberty gave them a run for their money in the final, but ultimately they ended up pulling out the victory, like I said, for the second year in a row. And that was after losing two starters, including your general on the floor, the all WNBA point guard that they have on that team. I believe her last name is Gray. I can't remember her first name at this moment. But, you know, I've said this on the show since we started. I am so happy that women's sports has really started to take shape in all of the major sports, more so than ever before, in my opinion. And the WNBA has done a great job in expanding their game from the early days of Lisa Leslie and Dawn Staley and, you know, some of the others that were great, great players, but the visibility was not there. Now it is there. I mean, it's not there to the extent that it should be still, in my opinion, but you can at least watch a WNBA game a lot nowadays than you were even 5-6 years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think the WNBA has done a lot of things really, really well and really smartly. So congratulations, yes, to the back-to-back champs. And part of it is just the availability of, like, you can watch, not only can you watch WNBA games relatively easily now, thanks to all the streaming platforms and places to watch sports. We have a great environment right now to watch basically whatever you want, but also the support from the NBA, the support from ESPN, and, you know, here in Canada, affiliates like TSN, who are showing the highlights, who are giving people the opportunity to see these great athletes perform and do their thing. So I think the WNBA does a lot of things right, and I wish nothing but success. I hope it continues to grow, and I hope we see more. I hope that we see that in more sports, because right now the WNBA is so head and shoulders above other professional women's sports leagues. Certainly in North America, I know there's some wonderful leagues in Europe as far as like football goes, soccer that is, and whatnot. So I don't want to discount any of that, but when it comes to North America, the WNBA is the template. And I think that other professional women's sports leagues in North America can learn a lot from them.
Now, we also saw the wrap up of the regular season of the Canadian Football League this past weekend. And they are getting ready for the beginning of the playoffs. Somehow, the Calgary Stampeders were able to keep their playoff streak alive by the skin of their teeth, getting into the Canadian Football League playoffs for the 18th consecutive year. Conversely, for the second year in a row, after the Saskatchewan Roughriders came out in the first half of the season and looked like they were going to have a really good year, they went 0-15 over the last two seasons in the second half, which really speaks to some changes happening this offseason in Saskatchewan, with their head coach looking for a new contract and their GM looking for a new contract. I believe that both of them are going to be out. Special shout out goes to the Toronto Argonauts, who for the second year in a row look like the class of the Canadian Football League getting into the playoffs, along with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who have been there seemingly year in and year out since Mike O'Shea became their head coach. And also special shout out to the marketing team of the Toronto Argonauts, who, in my opinion, really hit a home run this season with those baby blue, powder blue home uniforms that they've been rocking along with the powder blue helmets. I friggin' love that look, but that's a side note.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to see. I think it's been a good year. It's been a lot of entertaining football played in the CFL, and it's nice to see the league bouncing back after what was obviously a really tough go with the pandemic and everything that happened sort of in 2020 and 2021. So it's nice to see the league bouncing back, being, you know, living in the Hamilton, seeing all the excitement around the Grey Cup week coming up in November has been encouraging and definitely exciting. So it'll be fun. Playoff sports is always the best. And the CFL is a pretty unpredictable league, right? There's a lot of parity in that league. There's a lot of teams that can really show up when it comes to the playoffs. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I believe that it is the only league really that you can look at where a team can be up by two scores or two and a half scores with 6 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, and you still don't know if that's enough to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, there. Look, don't get me wrong. In Canadian football, there are some rules that just make simply no sense and that are confusing and frustrating for football fans. I get it. But there are a few things that I really like. One of the things I like is is having to run a play, not being able to run the clock to zero without performing a final play. I like the idea of that, forcing teams to, you know, actually play. Unless you have possession of the ball, you can't just, the clock simply just doesn't run out. And I like that's a good wrinkle. There's a few, the faster play clock I like in the CFL. There are certain things that I don't like, but the urgency with which the game is played and some minor tweaks, I think, really do create an interesting element that is unique from, you know, the NFL.
Is there anything on this Monday, October 23rd, 2023 edition of the Isolation Series that we need to talk about that we haven't, my friend?
No, I think that's good, Spence. Always fun chatting. Looking forward to more, you know, championship baseball tonight, Monday Night Football, NHL rolling along, and of course CFL playoffs starting next week.
Absolutely. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series for Monday, October 23rd, 2023. We appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so, and we appreciate our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often and as frequently as we do. But until we come at you again later this week with another edition of the Isolation Series, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye.
And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.